Hello and welcome to Podwarp 1999 Season 2 Episode 3 Manchester United 0. I am Ben Padden and the rest of us are also here. We have a full lineup more or less. We have Jim Francis. Say hello, Jim.
Hello.
I told Jim to say hello, Jim. Not you. All right, fine. You can say your. All right. That was Mark Meckes, everybody. That was Mark. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
God damn it, Tom. Jesus Christ. That was the voice of Tom Truskowski. Say hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Who? See, now we're going backwards. I feel like we're making some very. This bit could have kept. All right. There's also David Davis is here.
Salutations.
That's all right. You know what? That's good. There's a whole mess of syllables in that word. I will take it. And finally, joining us for, or at least as far as I'm aware, for the first time, he may have been on the podcast before, is the wonderful Steve Troop.
It's me. Hi.
That's him with that voice that he has all the time. That sounded disparaging. I'm not trying to disparage your voice. I just was just making an observation that that is what you sound like. I wasn't meaning to imply that I don't approve of your voice. It's a nice, it's a great voice. I love your voice.
Thanks. Very good impersonation of yourself.
That's good.
I mean, it's almost
a hobbit,
spot on.
Whichever.
If I go up a couple octaves, I sound with these headphones. I sound like I'm stuffed up. So I don't know if that's what it sounds like on your end.
No, you sound fine. You sound okay. Like you sound like I would imagine. You would sound like.
There we go.
If we were in the room, but we're not. We have to live the fact that this is six people. Now, is that too many people for a podcast? I begin to wonder. We have half a dozen people all talking about whatever it is we're going to be talking about in this particular episode of our insanely popular science fiction podcast.
Ben, I have a question for you.
Absolutely.
How many people do you say are here right now? Because do they teach you math in Britain?
That's half. I said half a dozen. That's six people.
I see five on my.
And you, oh, you see yourself
plus you.
Five.
Oh, I don't count.
Yeah, I don't see myself either.
I don't.
You live apparently. Here he insults Britain's mathematical teaching. It's like the guy in the comments who tells you you're an idiot and misspells it.
It's the number of people in metric.
It's a baker's half dozen.
You got to convert between metric and imperial. I think in imperial we're actually like 8.2 people. But I don't know how many people that is in pound sterling. I can't. I used to be able to do the conversion off the top of my head, but
how many is it in stone?
I do know that in testicles, like a testicle is worth $35,000. So that's $70,000 a person. So we're at four.
Are you telling me if I get rid of my testicles, I can get a DeLorean? Is that kind of the idea? Or
yeah, basically.
and for that, we do have a dozen.
We're good. We have a full dozen testicles. We could split the money. Well, I mean, we wouldn't need to split the money because we would just take our share. Actually, you know what? I bring that up, but I looked it up this morning because I was actively thinking. You know what? I don't need two. There's two is showing off. I mean, Hitler only had one testicle, and look at everything he accomplished. I was thinking, I'd heard that they were taking, like, there was so, I guess for like transplants or whatever, they were paying $35,000 a nut, and I looked it up, I googled it this morning, so I thought, you know what, I'll look into it, and the first result was Snopes, and it's not true.
Yeah, I don't think so. That would sound like an awful lot for a testicle.
Just, it's just like my mother said, my testicles will never amount to anything. I think we're off to a great start, you know? This is good, we're having a ball.
Yes.
Yes.
This is good.
It's nice to go on tangents before we've actually gotten into anything to go on a tangent from.
You know what? I think that's actually a great way to start the podcast. I think it's a good way to ease everyone in to the disorganized disarray that is invariably going to happen when you have six or five in metric people talking at the same time about this. Before we actually start talking about the stuff that we were going to talk about, you know, the stuff that we plan in advance, like adults who do a podcast, I wanted to mention something. This episode is probably not going to go out in time, so this will probably get edited out, but I'm not bringing that up because it's not like a paid sponsorship. No one in their right mind would sponsor our inane gibberish. I think if you were a sponsor and you were looking for a podcast to listen to, and you listened to the first 3 minutes of this podcast, you would already no longer be listening. But I wanted
However,
to recommend...
However, if you do want to sponsor us,
oh, absolutely.
Feel free to write us.
Yeah, at podwop1999@comicostrich.com. But I wanted to mention it because I know that we're not quite there now, but when this podcast started, it was about writing a science fiction world. And I know that the listeners that we do have who may have been listening for a long, long, long time. That's a seamless cut. You can chop all of that stuff out. And it seems like we've just done nothing but talk about testicles for the last 27 minutes.
No, we can edit this whole part out anyway, so.
It's only unacceptable because I didn't say it, but... So let's talk about Deadpool, who looks like a testicle. So it's now been a month and at this point, at the point of recording, a month and 9 days since the Ryan Reynolds movie Deadpool, based on the immensely popular Marvel Comics franchise, graced our theaters to almost universally positive critique. I don't know about you guys. I've seen it 3 times and I loved it more and more every time I saw it. There's always something more. So let's talk about Deadpool. Now it's been in theaters for over a month. What are we doing?
Well, I ran out and saw it this weekend for the first time.
What did you think?
I enjoyed it. I kind of suffered from that lot of hype, lot of expectation, I think. And while I enjoyed it, I'm not sure that I saw it as earth-shaking as I was led to believe. I mean, obviously, there was the breaking the fourth wall, which was different. But, you know, the humor was well done. And the breaking the fourth wall was a tricky thing, but I think it did it very well. Ultimately, I thought it was just a good, healthy... superhero flick.
A fun romp.
Yes.
Now, I saw it the opening weekend, and I felt kind of the same way. I get annoyed by all his banter, to be honest.
I've seen it 3 times now. I went to see it, I can't remember how early I went to see it. I went to see it, I think it was opening weekend. And I thought, you know, same thing. I fell in for a lot of the hype, and I thought, this is okay, it's not great. And then a friend of mine said, we're going to go see a movie and I'm paying. So I thought, okay, that's great. I don't have to pay to see a movie. And then we ended up going to see Deadpool. And because I went in with that expectation of, oh, this isn't actually that good. I kind of paid more attention to it the second time around because I was looking for the seams and kind of looking at how they did stuff. And the second time around, I actually enjoyed it much, much more. Like it went from being merely okay to being a lot of fun. Like it went from being like a 3-star movie to a 4-star movie the second time.
Yeah, but see, I could see Ishtar if a friend paid for it and still love it. So, you know, no, I don't.
Ugh, I don't know about that.
That is. I mean, I enjoyed it enough that I took my friend Heather to see it. God, I want to say a week ago. No, it was a week ago today. Because she hadn't seen it yet, so we went to see it at the. Where do we go? The AMC 16 in Burbank, which is kind of my go-to theater. And I loved it again, and she loved it. So anyone who doesn't like Deadpool is wrong and dumb. I mean, that's not true. You know,
humans didn't like it. They just didn't think it was all that. That's all.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. I mean, I enjoyed it. It was just kind of one of those things, like, about halfway through, it was like, shut up!
Well, that's kind of Wade's character, though. He's supposed to be incredibly annoying. Yeah. He always has been.
When you say that's supposed to be Wade's character, do you in fact mean that is Ryan Reynolds in every Ryan Reynolds movie?
Except in the actual first time he played Deadpool, yes.
Yeah.
When they sewed his mouth shut.
You know, I haven't seen that movie, but I will be live streaming watching it.
That'll be fun.
Probably early next week.
I saw it opening weekend, and actually it was my girlfriend who dragged me to see it. I've been, like, super wary of Fox Marvel films, but yeah, she took me to see it, and I adored it. I thought it was great, and it's one of those that I'm definitely going to pick up on Blu-ray when it comes out.
So right. I guess the big question about it then is, do you think this is going to change the way superhero movies are made?
Regrettably, yes.
I actually don't. Like, I think if anything is going to change the way that superhero movies are made, it's going to be Batman v Superman in a horrible, horrible way. Because I don't know if you guys have seen the first negative review. The first reviews for Batman v Superman have started to come in, and they are almost universally negative. Like, two-thirds of the reviews have had nothing but bad things to say about how it's joyless, it's soulless. Warner Brothers are kind of...
I could have told you that 6 months ago, though.
You could have. And indeed, I would have agreed with you, because I don't trust... Look at Warner Brothers' track record over the last 15 years. They've made two, if you want to be generous, three really good movies, and we're talking solely about the Dark Knight trilogy. But everything else, Catwoman, Jonah Hex, Superman Returns, Man of Steel, you know, all of the... Green Lantern is another key example. It's another Ryan Reynolds movie. Every DC Comics property that they've tried to turn into a movie has been an unmitigated... It's been Trash City. And I don't know why people are excited. Oh, we're finally getting a Wonder Woman movie. We're getting a Suicide Squad movie. We're getting, you know, finally getting Batman versus Superman on the big screen. It's like, yeah, these things would be exciting if they were being executed on properly. And we're not getting that. Warner Brothers are trying to play catch-up to where Marvel is. Marvel have spent nearly a decade crafting their cinematic universe, and DC are desperately trying to get where they're trying to copy what Marvel have done. They're trying very desperately to.
They're not even doing it the right way.
Yeah, and they're so
taking the time with solo films. They're actually trying to get everybody in one film.
Yeah, and it's too soon. It's not the way to do it, because they're too busy looking at their bottom line and not looking at their you know, they learned the wrong lessons from the Dark Knight trilogy. The Dark Knight trilogy wasn't successful because it was a dark, brooding take on the Batman mythos. It was a success because it was intricately plotted. It used the Batman, the mythos of Batman and the story for the character and his rogue gallery, used them exceptionally well. Even in the case of Dark Knight Rises, which is not a great movie, but you know, still did interesting things with characters like Catwoman and Bane and Talia al Ghul. You know, it played with that sandbox in an interesting way and gave us interesting takes on those characters that I really enjoyed. And I think that Warner Brothers learned the wrong lesson from the success of the Dark Knight trilogy and the failure of what was intended to be a very fun, lighthearted take on the Green Lantern.
And I think that was a key word that you came up with, was kind of joyless. Man of Steel was, you know, it kind of showed that it was kind of miserable to be Superman. Ironically, the original, the Christopher Reeve Superman, was on TV earlier today. And that was a case of, you could see he loved being Superman, and Superman was a fun, everybody wants to be this guy. And that's part of the mytho. That's part of, you know, a good heroic story is wanting to be the hero.
But also, it has a very different tone. And to get back to the original question about Deadpool, you know, will a lighter, funnier Deadpool change the superhero genre? It would if the other darker, more serious movies were not doing well, but they're doing very well. I mean, Marvel, the grittier Marvel movies are doing very, very well. So it may enable some copycats, and there may be a few more lighthearted attempts, but I don't think it's going to change the juggernaut that is the Marvel Cinematic Universe right now.
And they're the lesson they're going to take away from it is not that it was lighthearted or that it was the breaking the fourth wall. It's going to be, oh, we can make an R-rated.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yes. Movie. Yeah. You're right.
And we're already starting to get that. I mean, Warner Brothers have already said they're making an R-rated cut of Batman v Superman that we probably won't see in theaters. That'll probably be like a, you know, Blu-ray or digital download. It's weird that we're moving away from Blu-ray now. Like, we're definitely moving towards digital downloads as the norm. I like having stuff on a shelf, but that's because I'm a trash person. But, you know, the R-rated thing scares me a little bit, because I know we're getting R-rated cuts of the new Batman v Superman. We're going to get an R-rated cut of the next Wolverine movie. Like, that's already been confirmed. And obviously we're going to get Deadpool 2. I don't know whether we're going to see more R-rated stuff from the Marvel staple, because I know that they're playing very firmly in the PG-13 world, but we're getting more R-rated stuff from the Netflix offerings, which you know, we were getting that before Deadpool. Wow.
It's just the way it is. No one wants to hear your superhero unless he swears every other word.
Yeah, and I honestly don't have a problem with that, as long as it's executed well. Like, one of the reasons why I think Deadpool works is not because he swears, but because it's appropriate for that character. Like, there's a point in the movie where he's swearing, and Colossus says language, and Deadpool says suck a cock. And that's, here's the thing, the words suck a cock are not inherently funny, but as a reaction, as a response to being told to watch your language, that's inherently funny, and it's delivered with such gusto. That Ryan Reynolds was born to play Deadpool. I mean, there's no argument about that.
Well, I think part of the reason Deadpool succeeded as well as it did, I mean, number one, the writing. I thought it was a very tightly written movie, and that's the thing. You can have an R-rated film, but it's not just R-rated for the sake of justifying, you know, violence and language. There has to be a larger point to that. Things like, say, Batman versus Superman with an R-rated cut, I don't think it's going to justify that.
Yeah, and I realize that this might be kind of a wobbly thing to say. Certainly it's going to make me seem like some kind of sex pervert, but the montage between Wade and Vanessa and their year of sex might be one of the funniest things I've seen in a movie over the last couple of years, and particularly because they're going through all the different holidays. My favorite one was Lent. I thought that was fucking hilarious. I thought that was it's such a fun sequence, and it's not fun because look at these two very, I mean, Ryan Reynolds can absolutely get it, as can I'm blanking on her name, Marika, but I can never
remember. Verena Bakarin.
Thank you very much. Just a pervert to remember the name of a beautiful woman. That was a joke about you being a pervert. That is incorrect. Thank you. And I apologize.
No, I fully admit.
But yeah, they're both very, very beautiful people, and yes, they are having very fun, very raunchy sex, and that's fun. That's on its own pretty fantastic. But that's not why I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it because it was a funny montage that just happens to be about sex. I also enjoyed seeing parents with their kids in the theater realizing what was happening in the movie and kind of going, "Yeah, I think this is the swearing and the violence from earlier. I was okay with my child seeing, but now there's some sex happening. Maybe we should leave."
And you bring your kid to an R-rated movie, you pretty much get whatever you deserve.
It's incredibly common, though.
I know it's common. That doesn't make it right.
Oh, I agree. But
I saw the youngest child I saw the first time I went to see Deadpool. The youngest child I saw couldn't have been older than like 6 years old.
The first time I went to see Terminator in the theater back in the 80s, there was a baby crying in the theater in Terminator.
Wow. It's John Connor.
Deadpool, by the way, in the US, Deadpool was given an R rating. In the UK, Deadpool was rated a 15, which means that no one below the age of 15 can see that movie, which is fair. I honestly thought it'd get an 18 because the British, the BBFC, which is the British Board of Film Classification, for people out there who like acronyms, they don't like sex. They don't like the idea of seeing human beings having the sexy time. So I thought it would get an 18.
Quick question for you, Ben. When you said no one below 15 can see it, is it just a guideline, or they literally like card the person who wants to see it?
Oh, like, sure. In the UK, it's law. It's very very strictly.
I mean, you can't see it at all, or you can't see it without a parent.
You actually cannot go and see it without a parent. Like when I was a kid and Liar Liar came out. And that film got a 12 certificate in the UK. And I think I was 10 or 11. And I went to see it with my sister, who would have been 9 or 10 at the time. And when my dad bought the ticket, he told us to go and stand in the corner so that the person selling him the ticket wouldn't see that he was buying three tickets, two of which would have been for kids.
Huh.
It's an enforced law in the UK. Under the same thing, a kid cannot walk into a WH Smith and pick up a 15 or an 18 rated DVD. They will get carded. Well, they won't get carded because we don't use ID cards in the UK. Or at least
do 12-year-olds in the UK have identification? I mean, seriously.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
I don't think there isn't any. I mean, there are ID card. There are companies that will sell an ID card that some places will accept, but we don't have anything like, you know, there's no like formal, I guess, you know, it would be a driver's license, but we need to carry picture ID in the UK. It just doesn't happen. So if there's probable cause for the person behind the counter to doubt that the person buying the DVD is below the age on the certificate, they can say, no, I'm not going to sell this to you.
Whatever.
It's kind of like how things should be here, but isn't. Like, you get kids going into, you know, GameStop and buying Grand Theft Auto 5.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway.
Back to Deadpool.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy it as much the first time because, again, like, you know, like some of you guys, I went in with high expectations and they weren't met. So when I went in again with the second time of, okay, this isn't as good as I thought it was, going in the second time without those expectations, it was a far more enjoyable movie. And I caught a lot of the jokes and visual references and gags and goofs and the little, you know, jab in the ribs that it did to other superhero movies that I hadn't caught the first time because I was too busy waiting for it to blow my socks off.
But would you say it's eventually lived up to your original expectations?
I don't think it reached my original expectations because with hindsight, I don't remember what my original expectations were. I think my original expectations were everyone. Here's the thing. During production, I thought this is going to be terrible because A, Fox are making it, and B, they're going for an R rating, so it's probably actually going to be quite stupid. And it was stupid, but not in a, like, oh, this is really dumb kind of way, but stupid in a fun, stupid kind of way, as you do occasionally get. The second time, it didn't meet my original expectations, but it created new expectations from the first viewing and then exceeded those. So I really couldn't give you a barometer of, you know, where my expectations ultimately landed with regards to, you know, my original expectations. I couldn't do it.
I was particularly pleased. Like, I love how it treated the X-Men stuff in the movie. Like, Colossus was my favorite part of the movie, but then Negasonic Teenage Warhead was fantastic as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, she was great. The casting of that character was great. She was delightfully moody. The way that I mean, that character is completely different in the comics. If you have any familiarity with the character in the comics, she's more of a kind of she's telekinetic or psychic or something in that ballpark. And they made her, they gave her that kind of kinetic explosive energy power that's kind of similar to what, it's kind of in Gambit's ballpark, but not as physical, because it goes with that character name, and they had to get apparently permission from Marvel to do that. That character was fun, like she was delightful to watch, and her interactions with Deadpool were fantastic. It was just so much fun. Do you know what, actually, you know what, thinking about this, this feels like the kind of superhero movie that Adam Sandler would have made when he still gave a shit about making movies, like when the movies that he made were actually fun. Does that make sense? I think it was like a slither of time. It was like an 8-month period between, I think, like the fall of 1998 and the summer of 1999 when he actually gave a shit about what he was filming. You know, does that make sense? I've actually thought that doesn't make sense the more I think about it, but
we can edit that out.
It's difficult to look at what, you know, what quality Adam Sandler was then through the lens of the monster he has become now.
Well, I think quality is a dangerous word to use in regards to Adam Sandler, even during exactly. the period when he was making entertaining movies. But
this is true. I think that accusing Adam Sandler of having quality devalues the word quality and therefore devalues the quality of every other creative endeavor on the face of the earth, including but not limited to this podcast. And by mentioning it, I have reduced the value of this podcast to basically zero, which actually might be an increase thinking about it. So we might actually be on the up and up now because we associated Adam Sandler with the concept of quality.
When you say Adam Sandler had quality in a certain time period, what movie are you referring to?
I'm referring specifically to about 47 minutes worth of The Wedding Singer.
Oh my God.
Which 47 minutes?
I mean, it's not consecutive.
Oh.
It's spread out. Yeah, I mean, The Wedding Singer is the only Adam Sandler movie, A, that I own, and B, that I liked enough to buy on Blu-ray. But in fairness, you know what? I haven't watched it in 10 years. In fact, I haven't watched the Blu-ray since I bought it. So maybe I need a refresher course.
Almost, like, I probably in the last month, I've watched Tommy Boy about 15 times. You know, Tommy Boy with Farley and Spade.
No, I've never seen it.
I had never watched that movie before, and it came up in my Netflix. And that was done right around the same time as The Wedding Singer, I think. And I just can't believe what a good film that is. I mean, beyond being a dumb Saturday Night Live type film, it actually is plotted pretty well.
Huh.
I don't know.
That's surprising.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Hmm.
To the and then it was all negated by Black Sheep, but whatever.
Well, we're all learning things today about movies that are tangentially related to Adam Sandler, which apparently includes Deadpool.
So, but hopefully does not include Star Wars.
No. Oh, what a segue. Nice. I'm awestruck.
It would have been great, but I had one more point about Deadpool. So
damn it.
Sorry to kill that.
Let's hear the Deadpool point.
Okay. I did have one issue with the movie, and it was kind of like the tonal dissonance between his origin and like the more comedic aspects once he becomes Deadpool. Like all the stuff in the lab just kind of dragged for me. Did anybody else have that issue?
The first time I saw it, I had that issue, but the second time I kind of it creates an interesting split between the life that he lived before he became a mutant and the life that he lived afterwards. I feel very much like the kind of slightly disjointed wackiness of the Deadpool side of that story further emphasizes how his mutation affected him. Like, if you look at who he was before, if you look at, you know, before he gets, you know, put in the let's call it what it is, a shitbox, and ruined by Francis or Ajax or whatever you want to call him. Certainly he doesn't want you calling him Francis. I don't think that really matters much anymore. Spoilers. But I think that the half or the third, I guess, of that story where he's still very much Wade Wilson doesn't, if you look at it, it doesn't break the fourth wall. It's much grittier in tone and presentation, and I think that was a very deliberate choice to delineate between who he was as a person who existed within the cinematic narrative and then who he became as a result of the mutation and acquired this ability to A, recognize the fact he's a character in a movie and break the fourth wall and so on, and B, it became slightly Caca for Cuckoo Puffs.
Yeah. It became part of the transformation.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of somebody who's only seen it once and didn't love it, I found myself thinking to myself about 10 minutes in, when are you going to get into the suit? You know, and when I think about superhero films, like the two that always stand out to me are this Christopher Reeve Superman and the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, okay? And I never, even though they were origin stories, I never felt like, when are you going to get into that suit? You know, it's like, I don't know, maybe I'm just picky.
I don't know. I mean, I think that's a fair criticism, and I think that's also one of the reasons why they chose to represent the story or present the story out of chronological order for that first half of the story.
I think that was great.
You want to open with him already in the costume. That's how you want to do it. Right. And you can't do that if you open with him, you know, doing the, you know, accosting the pizza guy. And you have, I mean, what if you were to take that movie and recut it in chronological order, you'd probably be looking at maybe 45 to 50-ish minutes before he's even wearing even that kind of rough homemade version of the Deadpool suit. Which, you know, I mean, we all know from previous superhero movies, people don't like it when it takes forever to see the title character, like Ang Lee's Hulk. Is 2 hours long, and it inexplicably takes 4 hours before we get to see Eric Banner Hulk out.
Itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's a film that literally rends a hole in time and space. But, you know, I think opening with him already, hi, I'm Deadpool, I'm in the back of this cab, I'm getting gum stuck on the camera, isn't this hilarious, is a great way to open that movie. And then intermittently cutting back and forth between the fight on the highway and his origin story, I think works really, really well. And it also served to kind of juxtapose the grittiness of his pre-Deadpool life with the silliness of his post-Deadpool life. Like, I love that. I love that juxtaposition. Yeah. And it's one of those things that kind of really hit me on the third viewing of the movie, is just how well executed an origin story Deadpool is. Because they could have... Here's the thing. Origin stories are kind of done. And there's really only so many ways you can do an origin story. And we've had... You know, in the last decade, we've had two Spider-Man origin stories. We're about to have a third. I mean, you really think that by the third time around, Uncle Ben would know what's coming and he can dodge the fucking
game? Are they going to start over from scratch with Spider-Man when they do the Spider-Man standalone film? Because I've heard otherwise.
In the opening credits, I think what they'll do is they'll have a little montage that shows his history up until then.
Yeah, kind of like they did with The Incredible Hulk with Ed Norton.
Oh, okay.
I always want to say Graham Norton when I want to say Ed Norton. And that would be such a different movie if they cast Graham Norton as the Hulk. But I'd watch.
You don't want to make me angry.
Okay, Tom, do your segue again.
Do it again.
Clever. Okay, Star Wars Star time. Wars?
All that happened is Tom's mouth unhinged, and the opening crawl from Episode 7 just floated out as like a flat disc of solid of text that you could read if you were looking at it. If you were standing behind Tom looking over his shoulder, you could read the crawl.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is an audio podcast, so it loses some effect. You know.
Yeah, but that's why I described it for the listeners at home /in their car/in the bath/.
You're blowing the illusion that we're all in the same room.
We are all in the same room. That's why we all have completely different microphone qualities and keep accidentally talking over each other because of the lag in the room.
Exactly.
So Star Wars Episode 7, it came out in theaters just before Christmas. We are a couple of weeks away now from the home video release. I think it's coming in like a week or two on April Blu-ray 5th. and April 5th. And then we get it on Blu-ray on the 5th, and we get the digital on the first or the second, which I think is the shortest gap that Disney have. But usually Disney like to give the digital release like either 2 to 4 weeks lead time because they really want people to kind of lean towards digital now. The fact that they've had such a close gap for Episode 7, I think, just goes to show that they're very, very acutely aware of the fact that Star Wars fans will go out and buy it. So, so good for them. But as we're nearing the home video release, every other podcast on the planet has reviewed The Force Awakens at this point, including but not limited to a cross-stitching podcast I listened to called Witty Little Knitters. What did we think? Firstly, I guess I'm assuming that we all saw Episode 7.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good. How many times did we see it?
Three.
I saw it twice.
Get out.
It's funny. I really liked it. I liked it the first time. I wanted to go see it the second time, and then I stayed up all night the night before I saw it the second time, and I kept falling asleep. So I don't know if that's too much about the rewatchability of Star Wars Episode 7, or just that I should get more sleep.
I think it means that you need to spend more time sleeping. Sleep is an essential bodily function. We can't underplay the importance of sleep.
There you go.
I'm sleeping right now.
Damn it, you stole my joke.
Yeah, speaking of first impressions, I tried not to expect too much from the movie, but I guess that's hard. Although, with the quality of the prequels, maybe not that hard. But I was pretty disappointed on the first viewing, to the point where I had a sick headache when I left the theater.
Really?
And seeing it again without, because I have a problem the first time I watch movies. If I'm not completely immersed in it, I'm thinking about what's going to happen, and I kind of ruin my own enjoyment of the film. But the fact that it didn't immerse me says something about it. But because I like the new characters, but the writing was really kind of weak, despite the fact that it replays basically all of the events of the first movie.
See, that's a criticism that I've,
actually.
I, I've heard a lot of people say it's just a remake of A New Hope, and I have to say I categorically disagree with it. I think, yes, it does borrow some of the same themes and some of the same elements of A New Hope, and to a certain extent Empire and Jedi, but it's not, I mean, it's really not a remake of A New Hope. I mean, you know,
it's got a different title and everything.
It's got a
really
total
is, but that's,
title.
That's not what
it's,
I discussed.
But it's not. But it's not. But I think one of the key things, I think the key thing about Episode 7, the key thing they had to do with Episode 7 is remind people that the prequels don't represent Star Wars, and they had to remind people why they loved the original trilogy in the first place. Yeah. And to that end, yes, I do think Episode 7 echoed certain elements of the original trilogy, and I think that was a very smart, very sensible thing to do to get people back on board.
I think what's telling is what they... That would have been fine. They did a lot more than just echo. It was... I mean, and that's not the problem I had with the movie, but they did a lot more than just allude to certain elements. They were the same elements. Some of them were the same shots. I mean, again, it didn't bother me that much, but the third time I went to see it was with my sister, and every time there was a beat where it was clearly lifted from the original, she would, like, audibly groan, reminding me how many of them there actually were, because by that time I wasn't really thinking about it. And there are a lot. But you're right. One of the jobs they had to do was to bring this back from the dead. So
yeah,
there are things they kind of had to do which didn't necessarily help. If this were an original movie, they wouldn't have had to do those things.
Yeah, and I think we're going to get less of the kind of retreading or echoing of past elements in Episode 8. It certainly seems that way. But, I mean, here's the thing. My experience growing up, I wasn't exposed to Star Wars until 1997 when A New Hope Special Edition was released in theaters. That was my first exposure to Star Wars, was seeing the crappy CGI Jabba the Hutt that Han Solo walks around, seeing Greedo shoot first. And I remember coming out of the theater, because my cousin Andy took me to see it, because he loves Star Wars. My cousin Andy took me out, took me to see it, and I remember walking out of the theater thinking, it's all right, it's not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad. And then the next Star Wars movie I saw was literally... 2 years later when Phantom Menace came out. And that was the next Star Wars movie I saw. So when I eventually, about a week or two after Phantom Menace came out, I watched Empire and Jedi on VHS. And admittedly, again, it was the 97 special editions. But everything that I saw was colored by the fact that I, as a 13-year-old boy, thought that the Phantom Menace was hot garbage. So my entire experience growing up with Star Wars was colored by a disappointing viewing of the original Star Wars and a disappointing viewing of the movie that everybody acknowledges is Garbage City. So I never had that affection and that love and that longing and that passion for Star Wars that a lot of people from my generation and from, you know, older people's generations and Mark's generation, and I don't actually know what age difference is. I just assume, Mark, that you're 50 to 100 years older than I am.
Probably.
Yeah, but I mean, my friend Joe, who's, you know, he's in his 50s, remembers going, like, being 8 years old and going down to see A New Hope in Anaheim at the theater there when it had just come out. And he, you know, he has that, like, that strong emotional connection. And I never had that. Like, when I was a kid, the thing that I was crazy about was Doctor Who and it was The Secret of Monkey Island. Like, those are the two things I was really, really passionate about. I learned to read so I could play The Secret of Monkey Island. So, you know, I own all the Star Wars movies on DVD, and they... You know, I think they're important films, but I never had that love for them. And it wasn't until going in and seeing Episode 7, you know, the first time you see, you know, the twin sons of Tatooine, and then you see the Millennium Falcon, and then you see Han Solo and Chewbacca and Princess Leia, or General Leia, sorry. And I realized about halfway through the movie that I was crying.
Yeah.
And I didn't really comprehend why, and it wasn't until the end of the movie that I realized, oh, crap, like, these characters do matter to me. This setting, this world actually matters to me. I care about these people. And that was a very emotional experience for me, realizing that that I had a greater appreciation for the original trilogy than I had previously thought. Like, I'd written it off as, oh, it's just that sci-fi thing, people love it, but it's not for me. And Force Awakens Well, it was an awakening in me. It was a realization that this stuff is important to me, and I get it. I think that's very important. I think if Lucasfilm hadn't been sold to Disney and we hadn't gotten a sequel trilogy, I can't say I would have had that moment of realization, and it wouldn't have hit me just how precious A New Hope, Empire, and Jedi, and bits of the prequel trilogy are actually pretty cool. But it wouldn't have occurred to me how important they are to me. Like, Episode 7 is the moment where I went into that theater thinking that Star Wars was kind of okay, and I came out of it, you know, a fully fledged Star Wars fan, crying because Han Solo was dead, and, you know, seeing that final shot. Everyone's seen it by now. These aren't really spoilers. Shut up. That final shot of Luke Skywalker at the end with, you know, grizzled, gnarly beard and his tinny little robot hand. Like, you know, seeing R2-D2 waking up, which is a moment that I kind of knew that was going to happen. The minute we see him deactivated, you know how the movie's going to end. This whole podcast, like the last 5 minutes, has been me rambling emotionally about a lot of this is going to get edited down. But basically,
let's think about Star Wars. So, you know, so there are the emotional reaction. I think emotionally, in terms of, you know, fan stuff, it worked reasonably well. I mean, people liked it. But let's think about it in terms of writing.
Okay. We're
all writers here.
Right. On that note, three things. Number one, I enjoy the prequels, so feel free to kick me out.
Physically remove him from the call? Is there a button for that?
I felt like this movie is kind of like a correction of what happened with the prequels, but in that sense, as a writer, I feel it was an overcorrection, because what they did is they were afraid of bogging down the movie with this idea about the politics of the universe, and thus all that important background information gets glossed over in the movie. And that
I kind of, to an extent, I agree with that. I think that I would have liked to have seen. I don't necessarily need Senate scenes. I don't need to see, the New Republic being the New Republic. But just like a little bit more of this is the shape of the Star Wars universe now. I would have liked to have seen before.
Could have fixed it with one scene, actually. When they pull Poe Dameron out of the scouting vessel onto the Star Destroyer, he could have said something like, "This is a Star Destroyer. You guys can't make these, not since the treaty," or something like that, to indicate that there was some sort of treaty between the Empire and the New Republic and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So the thing I liked about this one is I felt like it felt like an extension of the, you know, our original trilogy, you know, where they didn't care about a lot of that stuff and they didn't have all the expanded universe stuff. Like, I've said this before on many occasions, I absolutely hate Star Trek Into Darkness. And the reason is because it feels like a fan film. And I did not feel like this felt like a fan film from a writing
standpoint. I agree.
Yeah. I enjoyed Star Trek Into Darkness.
There are bits, my favorite part.
It almost turned me away from Star Trek, and people know how much I am into Star Trek, and I just couldn't handle it anymore, bad it was.
Literally my favorite, because here's the thing, a lot of people kind of write off Star Trek Into Darkness as being a dumb shooty laser Star Trek movie, and to an extent it is, but my favorite part of the movie is when Kirk is telling Scotty, "We're taking these missiles and we're going to look for this guy," and Scotty says, "Hey, that's dumb, I quit." Like, he quits because the plot is stupid, and that is my absolute favorite moment in the entire
I actually enjoyed stuff. I enjoyed the first probably half of the movie, and then it turned into the hit parade of best moments of Wrath of Khan, and
that's the part I didn't. Fan film.
And well,
the problem is you don't turn Star Trek into movies. Star Trek needs to be a serialized TV show. The movies, there have been a couple strong ones, but on the whole, Star Trek doesn't work in movie form.
Yeah, I mean, Wrath of Khan is easily the best Star Trek movie ever made, and is one of the finest science fiction movies. But it's not what Star Trek is about.
Like, also, arguably, it doesn't stand on its own.
You need the background of the serial adventures.
I don't know. I mean, I hadn't seen Space Seed when I first saw Wrath of Khan.
You need to know who the characters are. You don't have to need to have seen Space Seed, but if you haven't seen Star Trek and you watch Wrath of Khan,
you need to have that Kirk and Spock relationship in order for Wrath of Khan to pay off emotionally.
But I think that the original Star Trek, at least, by the time Wrath of Khan came out, it was so much part of the... People knew what it was, at least. I mean, everybody knew who Spock was, even if they had never seen Star Trek, you know? Yeah, he was enough of a you know, pop culture icon at that point. I mean, he was advertising beer at that time, so.
I'm not saying Spock that they need to explain who he was. I'm saying you don't care about these characters if you haven't seen them.
I find that a lot.
Yeah, the story is the way that they got him back for Star Trek The Motion Picture, because Leonard Nimoy wasn't going to do it, is there was a beer ad where...
Heineken, I think.
I can't remember exactly who it was, but his ears would grow with each sip of the... it was like a billboard. And Nimoy was like, you can't do this. You didn't pay me for this. I want a cut of it if you're going to do it. And Paramount said no, and they resolved that lawsuit, and they got him back to do motion picture. So, So I mean, he was
Here's the thing.
Go ahead.
Sorry, no. I said here's the thing, but didn't know what I was going to say next.
Okay. I think one of the things that was interesting was with Star Trek was when J.J. Abrams took over, how he blatantly said, "I'm turning this into Star Wars."
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of interesting to see. I think he took some of the Star Trek to Star Wars.
Yeah. I think that worked. You know, I can't think of any moment in Force Awakens that didn't work for me. I can think of things that I would have done differently or things that I would have liked to have expounded upon. I genuinely don't have a problem with any of the stuff that we saw in Force Awakens.
Well, I think the biggest thing. I think the biggest thing about Force Awakens is going to be to see how it fits in, how the other movies follow it up.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of room in it for, you know, a lot of the things that people didn't like. For example, you know, some of the beats that seem to reflect earlier movies in sequels might twist. Completely, you know, twist those beats in a different way, which would be nice.
And one other thing, too, is that this might be the first time that a lot of people, like, you know, anybody who's under, say, 15 has seen a Star Wars movie. You know, it's like they could be like have to be introduced to the world, and all these things that they're replaying from the earlier movies could basically be to set up things later on. And that's kind of.
Right. Yeah.
We have the baseline of what Star Wars is. Now we can diversify and everything with like the solo films and everything like that.
Yeah.
Also, they can hopefully concentrate more on the new characters, which is what I really liked about Force Awakens was the new characters.
Yeah.
And I don't think they really, I mean, like Poe Dameron. Geez, I would love to have seen, you know, another 20 minutes of Poe Dameron. We barely got to see him at all.
My name is Poe Panty Dropper Dameron.
Dude was awesome. He has a standalone comic, I think, which is actually kind of cool.
Yeah, well,
that brings up a good question. Have you guys been following any of the extra like Star Wars books or comics or anything like that?
Oh, no. Heavens no!
I'm Star Wars trash, so I've been doing that. So like a lot of stuff that came up in the movies where like they don't have that information, I actually had, and it helped me acknowledge the movie a little better. But it's just one of those things where it's like some of that information should have been in the movie.
Yeah,
but when Episode 8 comes out and they decide, oh, that doesn't exist anymore, you'll be right back with the rest of us.
Well, yeah, you would think that after, if you were a guy who was an expanded universe guy, you think you would have learned your lesson. But that stuff is nice to have, but you can't rely on it to tell the story.
I totally agree on that.
I know a lot of people who are really upset and angry that the expanded universe basically got, you know, pushed aside for the sequel trilogy, and as some, I wasn't like balls deep in the expanded universe, but I'd read some of the stuff, and don't snigger at me using the word balls. Don't do that. Don't be a child. I'm trying to have a heart to heart with you guys. But from a writing perspective, because this is at its core a podcast about writing, I guess maybe. If I had been commissioned to tell like a what happened next story in the Star Wars universe or in any, you know, fictional franchise, and the option was, well, you've got all these books and these comics that some people have read but the majority of people probably haven't, I would probably do the same thing. I would say, okay, well, if not everyone's read them, I'm going to push that stuff aside because I want the freedom to tell my own stories without being anchored to all of this, you know, supplemental material.
And what's more boring than watching a government be formed? I mean, that's basically what the books are about.
I mean, it could be good, but
Have you read The Truce at Bakura? Have you read it with your eyes? It's horrible. I would say the Truce at Bakura is worse than the prequel trilogy, than all three prequel movies combined. It's
the
awful.
Vast majority of the EU is worse than the prequels. It's terrible. That's not the only reason to get rid of it. It covers basically every possible permutation of everything that happens. Yeah. Someone has done something. So
I rewatched the
prequel trilogy. Couldn't follow it if you wanted to.
Yeah, I rewatched the prequel trilogy after episode 7 came out. And I actually enjoyed Phantom Menace more than I thought I would, but I could not get through those other two. Oh my God. It was just like, and I remember them being better movies than Phantom Menace, but I don't
Revenge
know.
Revenge of the Sith is my second favorite Star Wars film.
Well,
yeah.
Well, you're fired. I'm not going to call you anymore.
Yeah. Like, I feel like Revenge of the Sith, if he would have taken that and turned that into three movies, that would have made a perfect prequel trilogy, because it starts right during the war, and we see Anakin's evolution into Vader. I think that would have been perfect for a prequel trilogy.
I thought that the way they should have done it is, the first movie should have been the beginning of the Clone Wars, where Ben Kenobi and Anakin meet. And then the second one is where he turns and starts hunting down the Jedi. And then the third movie is about hunting down the Jedi and getting you to the end. That was where I thought they should have paced it, because I would have loved to see a quest to kill a Jedi. You know, that would have been kind of interesting. Raiders of the Lost Jedi.
How is that interesting? How is it interesting watching bad guys kill good guys? How is that story wise interesting? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, you can have.
Why would anyone want to watch that?
Because the other side of that would be the. Obi-Wan hiding the kids, and in the last 5 minutes where they like crammed in this, oh, and by the way, you can learn to talk to him when you're dead, and oh, by the way, we gotta move these guys, and oh, we gotta, you know, there was like this
whole movie was like that. I mean, it was total garbage written by someone who doesn't know how to write anymore, evidently, and that's George Lucas.
It erased the protocol droid's memory. Oh no! Yeah, that was going to happen because you don't remember any of this shit in the original trilogy, do you?
Right. Apparently, we erased Ben Kenobi's memory too, because he doesn't remember any of these droids.
I don't seem to recall owning a droid. That's because you're an old senile man.
That's because he never owned it. He just knew about it.
Yeah, but
he's being truthful from a certain point of view.
Do you remember every trash can you've passed in your lifetime? No.
Obfuscation is the Jedi way. He's being truthful from a certain point of view.
Whatever.
A certain point of view.
Yeah, but we're also talking about Jedi say things like only the Sith deal in absolutes, which is
itself an absolute statement.
It's
yes.
Dumb. Anyway, I think we can all agree that Force Awakens is the pinnacle of cinema, and there's no point making any more movies.
Wait a sec. Okay, I think we can all agree that Star Wars, while being fun movies, they aren't necessarily great movies.
Oh yeah, that's absolutely true.
We're trying to project this idea that Star Wars ends up being has some great movies in it. There's only one great movie in the Star Wars franchise, and that's Empire Strikes Back.
That is correct.
But see, they get lumped into science fiction all the time, and they're really a fantasy film, you know, and that's kind of like...
Yeah, but almost all science fiction movies that you see...
Where were you in our first episode, nerd?
Where were you in our first episode way back in 2000 and, shall we say, 7?
First episode of this season. There.
I was busy playing around the house.
Hey, let's take a moment... Let's move away from Star Wars, because it's clearly a hot button issue.
The one thing we got to say about them is that they're definitely successful movies, and hopefully we enjoy the 24 more that are coming in the next 3 years or so.
Yes.
There
you go.
Now, the next item on our list, which was actually the second item on our list, but we guess we've done some shuffling, is a, quote, possible Steve Troop update. I don't know what that means, but I guess Steve's going to tell us about his hair or whatever.
Well, I don't think we've been together since Steve has officially joined Pod War.
Right. Yeah.
And so the first episode, we all had a chance to introduce ourselves. I think Steve needs to do a little introduction. And
that is fair. Now,
who are you? What do you do?
I think everyone... I think of the group of us, my gut feeling is that Steve is probably... the least unsuccessful, that's just in case there are people out there who don't know who you are, Steve. Tell us who is you.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm the most successful. But, well, okay, so right around the same time Ben Patton was watching Star Wars, I was starting the I was starting comics online. So Melonpool started in 96, and it was a daily strip at that time, and I did it for about 10 years, and then started doing puppets for about 10 years, and then I came back and started doing both puppets and my computer went into sleep mode. That's how interesting I am.
No question. When you say you do puppets and comics, do you have a puppet on one hand and a stylus in the other?
Well, that's kind of the funny thing is I learned how to puppeteer left-handed so I could autograph at comic conventions while I was puppeteering. So kind of.
Oh.
But basically do the Melonpool characters as puppets and have done that off and on since I started doing the comic, and then I got fed up with webcomics for a while and ended up coming back, and you know, it's been fun.
Who doesn't get fed up with webcomics after a while?
Yeah, well, you know.
And then come back. Yeah.
Exactly. Then come back. Exactly. I figured when Mark rebooted the same universe, I had to come back and... Yeah, because Mark and I share universes. So that's kind of an interesting thing.
Yes.
I assume we share the same new universe as well. But
I assume, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
There's also a very tenuous link between the Jump Leads webcomic and Melonpool in that both sets of characters appeared in Chris Straub's Starslip, his big multiverse battle story.
Oh, right. That's right. Yeah. That was a whole universe ago for me, so I don't know if that
is. Yeah.
I think the entire prize was in a group shot in there, too.
I think so, too. I don't think he ever finished that.
I think most of us...
Oh, no, he walked away from it.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I know that I think some of it is still online, but my overriding memory
right
of that...
in the middle of the discussion with my characters.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But my memory of that
My guys killed it.
Oh, you're great. It was good times. You know what's weird is your characters show up and that immediately slowed the momentum of the update schedule, which I think is telling.
I've been working on a musical for this called Alien versus Musical that we did at the Hollywood Fringe Festival last year. We're bringing back this year, and we're doing a Kickstarter right now that we're going to be trying. We're trying to get to New York to do an off Broadway version of it. So that's kind of
off Broadway.
Ryan, how long's the Kickstarter going on?
Well, last I checked, it was like 1,500 of the 15,000 we want to get for it. So it's chugging along. Still has 30 days left, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll put a link to it on the show notes.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Definitely,
Or
yes.
You can search Kickstarter for Alien versus Musical, like I just did.
Yeah. But, built all the
that
puppets
for typing.
Help write the book. And a friend of mine who I've known for 30-plus years, and I... basically spearheaded wrote and did the whole thing, and he wrote all the music, and it's been a lot of fun. Actually, at WonderCon this weekend, we're gonna have the Alien and Maria from Sound of Music there plugging it. So
Nice.
Excellent.
I'm gonna be at WonderCon this weekend. We should definitely meet up.
Cool. Yeah, we'll be out in the lobby area probably. So thereabouts. Yeah.
So can you give us a synopsis?
So basically, it's the land of musicals where all the musicals you've ever heard of or not heard of have basically gone to live after their musicals are over. So you have Maria from Sound of Music, you have Annie from Annie, and Harold Hill from Music Man, and all those characters all kind of hanging out in this kind of world. And then the alien invades and starts killing them off one by one, and it's all set to music. So
nice.
And we have versions that we go from the egg all the way up to the queen, as far as like puppet representations of all of them. So, and when I say puppets, they're actually like the queen puppet is a 3-person puppet that's about 19 feet long. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's marvelous.
So what's your favorite musical in general?
Oh, I don't know. You know, it's funny because I always say with Alien versus Musical, my buddy Eric, he's the musical part and I'm the alien part. I kind of know that end of it.
I'm just going to guess your favorite musical is Richard O'Brien's Shock Treatment, the disastrous, horrific follow-up.
Oh, that was a sequel
to
Rocky Horror, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I've never seen it.
Oh, my God.
Actually, I like, and I don't know if this is truly a musical, but when I think of musical that I enjoyed, the Blues Brothers is probably the closest thing to a musical that I enjoyed when I was a kid.
That works.
We accept it.
Yep. Yeah. I can't think of any other, to be honest. I just built a dragon for a Shrek musical that was local up here. And I was amazed that that thing was even made into a musical. It was so badly done.
I think I saw that on Facebook. Your pictures of it and the construction process.
Yeah, you'll be seeing me rebuild all the alien stuff too. That'll be coming up in the next month. So,
nice. Are you on Instagram? And do you put that stuff on Instagram?
I do. Yeah, it'll be Alien versus Musicals Instagram as well as the Melon Pole Instagram. Basically, we'll pop those up. Yeah. Cool. So, you know,
not a lot of science fiction musicals, are there?
No, and that was the thing is Eric was like, you know, I was like, this is great because like in web comics, it was the thing is finding the niche that wasn't being, you know, written to, and you know, you find that niche and then you could just make your career off of it. And that's what we've done with this because, you know, nobody's doing sci-fi musicals. And he goes, nobody's going to come see this musical that knows anything about alien. It's going to be all musical people because unless they're dragged there by their significant other that loves musicals, they will not come to see it. And we've had about half and half. There are people who come basically just because they want to see some alien thing on the stage and as well as people who are totally into musicals. And one of the things that we did with it too is we didn't in the program, we didn't label who any of the characters were. So a lot of people who come have to kind of figure it out. Now, what's great is that we have people like Annie, who everybody knows, and we have people like you know, Maria, who's pretty well known. So usually I figured that there's Danny Zuko from Grease. You know, there's like that. That Elphaba from Wicked is in there too. And so they're like all kind of there. And so it's kind of like, oh, well, I know who half of those characters are, so I can kind of understand it. And then they're basically all types too, because they correspond basically with alien people or alien and aliens people that, works out. So it's kind of like finding the type in a musical to do it. And then each of their songs is in the genre of the original musical. So like Harold Hill does this great great song about what is an alien, but it's in like a Music Man type.
Nice.
Yeah.
So this is a great, great date event.
Yes. So yes. We're coming back. We're coming back to the Hollywood Fringe Festival in June of this year as well. So that's what the Kickstarter right now is for, nice. As well as to get all of our paperwork in order so that we can get investors for, the New York Fringe, the New York off Broadway thing. So yeah,
nice. I'm optimistic. I'm gonna look for you guys at WonderCon, and I'm gonna shake you heartily by the hand.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, yeah.
I'll be easy to spot. I'll be dressed as a pirate.
That was a very nervous laugh, Steve.
Years ago,
yay! So look for. maybe I won't be at the. Oh no! I've got to cancel my. A car sick.
Well, I haven't decided yet if Maria's going to be in her load lifter, her power loader costume or not.
Maria's on trap in a power lifter. That's amazing.
Yeah. So she get the Sigourney Weaver line at the end?
Some of them. Yeah, we kind of.
Okay.
Yeah, so not at the end, but it's in there. Yeah,
oh, okay.
We have our own kind of plot that kind of plays out, but it's fun, you know, and actually we're going from an hour-long show to an hour-and-a-half show this time, too, so we're going to add a whole bunch of stuff.
Ooh.
It as well.
Nice.
Spiffy.
Yeah. So, that's what I've been working on.
Very cool.
Steve Church, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Yay!
Yay! Well, we've been talking for over an hour at this point. Mm-hmm.
Impressive.
Do we have any, like, quick stuff we want to vomit out before we do our closing ceremonies? Closing ceremonies? Ben, come on.
Kylo Ren did nothing wrong.
This is the weird thing is on Tumblr, getting back to Star Wars for a minute, is seeing people, not just the Kylo Ren thing, but people who are apparently being incredibly forgiving of Anakin Skywalker. Like, oh, leave him alone. He killed a bunch of kids.
See, I find it really funny that there's so many, you know, kids that are dressing as Darth Vader and all this stuff, and I'm thinking, hi, you know... When I was a kid, Darth Vader was like the bad guy.
Yeah.
People love the bad guy.
Everyone wants to be the bad guy.
Even in the 70s, there were people dressed as Darth Vader. So, yeah,
I was a kid, I used to dress up as the bad guy from Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
And there are kids dressing up as Jason and Freddy.
Yeah.
Well, and you got to remember, Darth Vader's costume is really awesome. It's a great look. True.
Oh yeah, sure. it's there's a reason that, you know, I mean, if you look at A New Hope, he wasn't the main villain. The main villain really was Grand Moff Tarkin, and Vader was just kind of this bully, really, henchman. Just kind of this henchman. And it's because his character left such a mark and resonated so much with the audience, he was kind of elevated to, you know, imperial.
He doesn't actually have a title, though.
Etc. Yeah, he's Dude Man. He's Dude Man McGuyface. He became the main villain in Empire and Jedi became part of the focus of that narrative.
You know, there's just been this long theory that Lucas kind of came up with that whole Luke being his son thing on the fly. You know, but I just read this thing where they were saying that Darth Vader translates, is it in Swedish or German. Swiss? German? Is it German? Okay,
I think it's German.
Dark Father? Which I think is very interesting. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of
that's probably it.
And the hardest thing is that, I mean, George Lucas has been so self-contradictory about production of those movies. Like, he said, "Oh, I was only going to do one." He said, "Oh, I'm just going to do three." Then he said, "I'm going to do a sequel trilogy and a prequel trilogy." And then he says, "Oh, I was only ever going to do the prequel trilogy." And then he says, "Psych, I'm thinking of doing a sequel trilogy." And then he does Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which is great up to and including the Fridge Nuking scene, and then is then Toilet City for the rest of it. And then he sold Lucasfilm. And then he regrets doing it because he doesn't think Force Awakens meets his vision. This is the weird thing. I don't know. I don't want to spend too much time talking about this because we've all aged considerably during this Star Wars conversation. But
what's that?
Just let me get my ear horn in and listen to what this whippersnapper is going to say about the Star Wars. The thing
is that.
That was Ben.
Was that Gabby
Scruffy
Hayes?
The janitor.
Sure, why not? But there's been surprising how many George Lucas apologists have kind of crept out of the woodwork. People saying, you know, I enjoyed Force Awakens, but I wish George Lucas had been more involved. No, you don't. You don't wish that. Do you know what happens when George Lucas gets involved? We get the prequel trilogies, we get the Clone Wars movie, and we get all the dumb stuff from Star Wars The Force Unleashed. We get toilet stuff.
Well, I mean, it's like how quickly the fans jumped on Simon Pegg when he said something bad about George Lucas. Like, suddenly they'd forgotten how bad the prequels were.
There's a reason he's been maligned since 1999. There's a reason people don't like Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and it's because of George Lucas. The man is a shit peddler.
Well, it just goes to show that the fanboys will get upset about anything. So.
Oh, yeah. They're upset when a guy ruins a franchise, and then they get upset when he gets kicked off of it.
Short memory.
Okay, then.
Anyway.
Short memory. Hey, let's close this bad mamma jammer up. Tom, do you want to do the honors?
Sure. If you've enjoyed this and want to tell us how much you've enjoyed it.
Enjoyed it.
Oh, God. Hey, it's possible. There's some weird people out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're one of those strange people who's enjoyed this sort of thing, you can contact us. We're on Twitter, the PodWarp1999 account, and you can look for the hashtag PodWarp also. There's still email, PodWarp1999@comicostrich.com. There's also, I think the forum is still there. It's dead, but it's there. But, you know.
It exists. No one uses forums anymore. I mean, Twitter and Tumblr kind of killed forums.
Yeah.
They still exist.
But you can, we do occasionally take listener questions if you have questions about sci-fi and fiction or writing for science fiction or writing for fantasy, any of that stuff. If you, God, what was the hashtag?
Podwarp. #podwarp.
If you use the hashtag podwarp, PODWARP, we monitor that. If you have any questions, feel free to tweet them at us with the hashtag. Feel free to email them to us. If we get a question, we'll almost certainly answer it. And we'll do a better job answering it than we did of appraising Star Wars and Deadpool in this episode.
We promise.
No promises. No promises. Yes.
I love that we promised and promised no promises at the same time.
My fingers are crossed, but you can't see it.
I can't. I have tendonitis. I can't cross my fingers. But I'm thinking about it.
Alrighty.
All right.
Yeah. So who have we been? Who's doing the rest of the goodbyes?
I have been me.
And I haven't.
That's right.
I am who I am. That's all that I am.
Yeah. Someone's having a stroke. All right. Well, hey, we've been Podwarp 99. We have been Jim Francis, Tom Truskowski, Steve Troop, Mark Meckes, David Davis, and Ben Grand Wizard Padden. Don't know. Why would I give myself the Ku Klux Klan, like, head
poncho? Because a Grand Wizard in Britain is Harry Potter shit. So
you know what? You know, I'm Dumbledore.
There you go.
There we go.
We'll go with that.
Do you think that when he's having sex, his brain releases in Dumbledorphins?
That was a long way to go for that one.
I mean, it's not the longest. It's not the longest walk I've ever.
I've got one thing to say to that. Balls.
All right. Okay, that seems like the logical place. Thanks for listening to Podwarp 99. We will we'll see you next time. And I love you very much. Don't ruin this.
Nice.
Come on, we're having a moment.
Is that over?
This has been Podwarp 1999, the podcast that is exclusively used to send coded transmissions to Russian spies in the West.
3 is Earth's Assault on the Central AI by Tetix from the album Technology Crisis. A link to Tetix's website is available on the Podwarp 1999 website.